Burgers are best fresh from the grill. Well, more specifically, burgers with Hellmann's Real Mayonnaise. It's so rich and creamy that it instantly makes any burger irresistible. And what backyard barbecue is complete without some potato salad? Not just any potato salad, of course. Potato salad highlights the rich, creamy goodness of Hellmann's Real Mayonnaise. So if you want to take your barbecue season to the next level, stock up on Hellmann's Real Mayonnaise. For great recipe ideas, visit hellmanns.com.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks on a Monday. DJ Bucky Rhett back with you guys. And man, that was interesting. That was an interesting weekend of football. Some wild games. We'll have a chance to break down the college stuff later on in the week. But it is a Monday. And I don't even, like, a lot of times I'm like, okay, we are starting here. Buck, I don't even know where to start today because there's so much craziness that took place. Right? I mean, you guys, I don't know where to start. It's crazy.
So I was on Game Day Highlights and Game Day Final last night, and it was pretty clear. We're going to start with the team that scored 10 touchdowns. And so I'm pretty excited that Bucky's going to break down each and every one of those touchdowns for us here on this podcast. And I think we'll get to the other 15 games tomorrow.
So it's so unbelievable that a team can score 70 points in an NFL game. And I've been to high school games, and I can't imagine people scoring 70 points. Like, you almost have to, in a high school game, like, you have to not try to let someone score, like, 70 points. Like, it has to be either that big of a mismatch or your team just has to pack it in. To give up 10 touchdowns in an NFL game while scoring 20 points.
350 on the ground, Buck.
350 in the air. 726 total.
I just don't understand. But, I mean, I'll say this. If you're Mike McDaniels, this is the offense that everyone has been afraid of. I mean, when you look at that tape and you watch this team go up and down the field, you look at the track stars that they have. And keep in mind, they didn't have Jalen Waddle. But that's okay. Correct. Devin A-Chain will just come in there, and I'll show you that I am also a track star, and I'll run for 200 yards, and I'll put it in the paint from anywhere on the field. And Tua, don't worry about it, Tua. We can run it, but we still going to let you get your throws in and let you make sure that you're a fantasy legend. I mean, this is an unbelievable performance from an offense that we knew they had firepower, but I'm sure that every defense coordinator in the league is going to take a look at the tape and be like, what in the world? Like, how do you handle that? And before, I didn't want to say I dismissed the Dolphins. I thought their offense was, like, cute and those things. But now I'm like, I mean, can you really ride the offense? Like, they're riding it and make a big run. And Vic Fangio is everything to that defense. You now have a high-powered offense with a guy who understands how to play defense, and now he only has to hold serve. They're a dangerous team. They are a very dangerous team.
I think we'll go through all these games. We'll get there in a minute. I think they're the best team in the AFC right now based off what they've shown through three games, two on the road. Then they come back and just demolish the Broncos. I will say one thing, and then we'll jump into these. But, Rhett, I don't know if you've ever had just a terrible day at work, you know, and you call your wife on the way home. You call Kana and you just go, gosh, it's just been a terrible day. And then you get home and she's made your favorite dinner. You've got your favorite show all Tebowed up and ready to go. I wonder if Nathaniel Hackett got home last night and was just like, man, Zach Wilson, I mean, we can't move the ball. This is just, I don't know, are we going to survive? And then he gets home and there's a nice warm plate of cookies, a glass of milk, and that Denver Broncos Miami game is just on the TV, just waiting for him to watch that thing. And just, hey, we'll pick you up a little bit. That's what I want to see when I get home. The worst coaching job in the history of sports. All I know is at least they had a good defense. Their offense wasn't any good, but the defense was really good. Now yeah, it was the good offense last year. Still isn't any good. Now the defense stinks. So I don't know what to say about that one.
Train wreck.
I mean it's probably in the rule book why you don't trash other coaches, though. Just saying. Probably.
Football karma certainly came back to get Sean Payton. I mean, in a major way.
You were just setting this up, right? You're like, hey, look, man. Yeah,
really?
I don't know what we're gonna do this year.
I have to go back through the game logs, but I don't remember them giving up 70 points last year. 70. I have to go back and look at that. But 70. Could have the kid kicked a field goal, made it 73 and set an NFL record.
Three games in, and by the way, the questions to Sean Payton on the conference call today with the media were, did you fire anyone?
Whoa.
Yeah, yikes. He's like, no, and I wouldn't announce that on a conference call.
This is why this week is so bonkers, because we've got our rundown and we haven't even jumped into it here.
I know.
Because this is crazy. All right, let's get started. Let's go to the games that the Buck and I were at. We'll start with the Chargers Vikings game. I joke with you guys every week. I've been doing these games for 6 years for the Chargers. I've never called a boring game. I don't even know what that's like. What's it like to have a three touchdown win or a loss? I have no clue. Every game comes down to the very last possession. It's unbelievable, man. It's crazy. But they end up beating the Vikings 28-24. I'll get to some of the highlights, and then I'll let you guys jump in on the decision making, because that was the big buzz in social media, was Brandon Staley electing to go for it deep in his own territory late to try and put the game away, which we'll get to, and I'll get your guys' opinion on that. But before that, Justin Herbert's 47 for 405. It was they didn't really run the ball. This was a classic case of, you're going to play zero and you're going to play man. Why run the ball into a wall? I'm just going to zip it out. We're going to throw bubbles and quick screens all day long, make you tackle in space. We'll take those 5, 6, 8 yards. And then now, God, I felt bad for Byron Murphy, man. I'm like, Byron Murphy, like, hey, dude, you are alone with arguably the best route runner in the NFL and Keenan Allen. Like, there's other people that can be in the conversation. He's in the conversation. And you're going to have two-way goes against that dude with no help the whole day. And Keenan Allen cooked him to the tune of 18 catches and over 2 bills. Like, he had no chance. I don't know any corner is going to hold up out there with no help against that dude, as polished as he is. And Herbert was just kind of dialed in. So they chucked it all over the place. The difference, too, and I saw a stat that got posted. You know, we'll get to the Cowboys loss in a little bit. But the difference between Kellen Moore and Mike McCarthy, Kellen Moore, I think the Cowboys were number one in red zone last year. I think they're 27th now. It's been their Achilles heel. The Chargers went from way down the bottom of the league to they're up in the top 10 now. His creativity and ability to kind of finish drives in this game was the difference. The Chargers hold on. They end up winning this one 28-24. Last thing I'll say, I'll kick it over to Red on this one, but the best player on the field defensively in this game was a rookie, and it was Tuipulotu from out of SC. He was awesome. I think he had 4 or 5 pressures. He had a sack. He could have had 3 sacks. It's one of those ones where he generates the carnage and everybody else gets to kind of clean it up, but he's moving around. I mean, he has been playing like gangbusters. He is a really, really good football player.
That's awesome to hear. I love getting those little rookie reports, you know, on guys that, you know, maybe not getting a ton of buzz like elsewhere or otherwise. And you find that they're making an impact on the game. Here's what I'll say on the coaching decision. If there was anybody, and I'm going to talk directly into the microphone, that was surprised that Brandon Staley went for 4th-and-1 from his own 24 there, you have not been watching the Chargers. That was the least surprising move from a head coach that day. Now, you know, you could certainly take some issue with the way that they went about trying to convert that fourth down. And look, credit to the defense for making it stand up, you know, amidst some definite anxious moments there. So I was not surprised that he ended up doing that. You know, I wouldn't have been surprised if it ended up biting him. I mean, that's just one of those things. If you're gonna live and die with it, it's like, look, if you're gonna hit 16 on blackjack, you're gonna hit it all day long. You don't just pick and choose when you're gonna hit it. You got to go for it, right? Each time. If you're gonna hit, you know, 12 versus 2, you got to do it every time.
Hey,
you don't just pick and choose.
As long as you're not on an NFL business related trip, then you don't go in there, because we don't do that.
We're just talking generalities here. We're just talking strategy.
Let me ask.
Let me ask you this first, and then you can get in on the decision making here. But to DJ's point about the Vikings, you know, with a ton of cover zero, cover one in this game, At what point and how difficult is it for a defensive coordinator to midstream kind of flip the script? And look, we talk about adjustments. Everybody's making adjustments. But if you have game planned and if you have, this is the way we want to attack the Chargers, and now all of a sudden you're going to, how difficult is it to truly in game kind of reverse course that way? If this is what you've been working on in a week of practice to say, hey, look, Keenan Allen's flipping, cooking us over here. We got to do something different. So how hard is that?
Well, I mean, it's hard to do it in game, but I guess it depends on what was the goal of the game going into it. Like, what did Brian Flores really want to take away? Because I'm looking at the numbers and yeah, they had 475 yards, but at the end of the day, I mean, he gave up 28 points. He gave up a touchdown a quarter. They were in the game the entirety of the game. It was 14-10 at halftime. They're there. I'm sitting there looking at third down. They're 5-for-11 on third down. I mean, Justin Herbert had an unbelievable completion rate, like 41 or 40. I mean, that's crazy. They averaged 9.1 yards per play, but they didn't allow him to run. They forced him to play a one-dimensional attack. And then from an offensive standpoint, they controlled it. You know, it's tough because statistically you'd be like, man, you gave up so many yards on the air. But if you asked them, they had the game the way they wanted it. They were still right there at the end of the game. And so we talk about points, not yards. I can see where Brian Flores is like, the strength of our team is our back end. I'll put it on our back end to hold up. And Keenan Allen had a bunch of yards and they did that. But at the end of the day, they still had the chance to win the game.
Yeah.
No, I think that's a fair point. I'll add a couple other things on that, though. If you look the week before, Tennessee, look at the difference in third down with what Vrabel and their group did against the Chargers versus they obviously played a totally different style of game. Now, the difference also being that Jeffrey Simmons didn't playing in Minnesota. So that's the
difference. They don't have a pass rusher outside of Danielle Hunter. Like, I know they got Marcus Davenport and those guys,
he but Danielle
Hunter's the only one. And so you don't have a way to generate it. So all their pressure has to be manufactured. And so you're trying to quicken the clock. You're trying to see if you can bait Justin Herbert into that, like a turnover. But look, man, Brian Flores, and we know, like, he comes from New England. They'll use those snowflake game plans, something that is unique and creative and different. They tried it. They had the game. And if not for Kirk Cousins throwing up, look, an untimely.
Try to jam one in.
Yeah, they clock it. They go there. If they win the game, who's to say that we don't celebrate?
No, that was two goal line stands though at the end of the game. The Chargers had two of them. And on the Viking side of things, let me give you some good news on the Viking side of things. First of all, their offensive line is beat up, and they're not great to begin with, in my opinion. I'll say Cousins hung in there. Cousins got the snot kicked out of him in this game between Bosa and Tui Polotu. Mac was back there. Sebastian Joseph Day was hitting him all game long. He got peppered in there. And I left the stadium thinking another thing too. Jordan Addison, guys, you know, we all liked him coming out. He is going to be very good. Like it's going to be, he's going to be, they're going to have 1,000-yard receivers every year. It's going to be JJ doing his thing. And Jefferson was unbelievable. He was a yard shy. He was 149. He goes 150. He'd have been the only receiver in NFL history to go 150 plus in each of the first three games of a season. He missed it by one yard. Wow. So he was right there. He was awesome. But Addison is smooth and fluid. His ability to get in and out. Cousins trusts him. Buck, he's toe tapping on the sideline. He looked like sometimes you watch these guys, you're like, he looks like he's been playing this for 10 years. Like, he is ready. There is no assembly required.
Another example of route runners being coveted at a premium. You think about Kevin O'Connell and what they wanted. They wanted someone that could complement Justin Jefferson. They wanted to have interchangeable wide receivers that could win their individual battles on isolation routes and do all the creative stuff on the route tree to be able to create these big plays. Jordan Addison can do that. And for me, I think it has to change the way that we evaluate wide receivers. We can put the stopwatches to bed. Like, it's about your ability to stop, start, get open, create all the stuff. And we need to see you at the combine and at your pro day really run routes to get open, because the athleticism is great. But man, the guys that are able to do it with, like, tactics and technique, they have an opportunity to do it in a major way.
How about my dude Jake Bobo, by the way? We'll get into that. I don't think we're hitting on that game, but kind of fits that bill too, you know.
We'll get some bonus stuff, but I'm going to transition Buck to his easy here, because we talked about this a few weeks ago. I feel like I love it when we get a chance to be a little bit ahead of the curve. Do you remember when we talked about the little dudes and we're like, look, Calvin Austin's had a good camp, Tank Dell's had a good camp, Jordan Addison's had a good camp, like all of a sudden Tutu Atwell had been making plays. Like we're like, we've been kind of like, you're too little. It's too small. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, Buck, you get to Tank Dell in the game you were at, but he had a phenomenal game and scored another one for the little dudes.
Yeah, scored another one for the little dudes. But this game, to me, DJ, like, it's one thing to go through your pre-draft stuff and we talk about it. And I feel like maybe sometimes we spend so much time talking about it that maybe you lose a little bit of your natural feel for the prospect because we're on TV, we're going back and forth, we're trying to create different storylines and different angles. But I'm going to say this, CJ Stroud is as good as we've talked about. He is as advertised. And I know during the run-up to the draft, there was a lot of conversation about other stuff that kind of clouded his evaluation.
RIP the S2, by the way. Thoughts and prayers to the S2 test.
Yeah, DJ, like all that stuff clouded. I'm telling you, when I'm watching him, this dude looks like a 10-year vet in the pocket. They have four offensive linemen missing. The Jaguars are trying to heat him up, and he never flinches. He only got hit four times, but he is delivering dime after dime after dime. And we talked about in the run-up to the draft about him being maybe the most natural passer and thrower. It is effortless to the point where when you talk to the coaches for the Jaguars, but they're like, man, this dude is, I mean, he is legit. Like, we better get him now because in a couple years, he is going to own it in terms of, like, how he gets it. I mean, this dude, he's so good. And at the end of the day, you talk about Tank Dell. Tank Dell hits them. Look, the game, it's like a 10-point game. And it's a zero hit. It's third and five. And they bring all the pressure. Tank Dell escapes. And CJ calmly, coolly hits the layup. I mean, perfect pass. Oh, boy. And he just does it over and over again. And afterwards, D'Amico Ryans and everyone's talking about, oh, we got the right quarterback for us. The players believe in Brevin Jordan, their team. We talk about franchise quarterbacks giving guys hope. He's that guy. I mean, look, I'm looking. Three passers have only started their career with like 900 passing yards. He's that. He's one of three to do it. DJ, he has no interceptions. We talk about ball security. He doesn't turn the ball over. Mm-hmm. For a young guy to play behind a hodgepodge of mess to not turn it over, it's everything. He's a really good player.
Can I add one thing on Stroud here and Rhett, jump in here? By the way, this the score, if you don't know, 37-17. The Texans got all over the Jags. This is one thing in scouting. I think this is a good lesson in scouting. Every evaluation is an individual evaluation. We talk about in the past, don't scout the helmet. In other words, like don't just give a guy a grade because he's at a big school versus punishing a guy who's at a small school. But also, don't grade a current player on the sins of a past player at the same position. They're all different. They're all unique. Yeah. You can't say the Ohio State quarterbacks, lump them up together and throw them in a barrel. He is so different than the other guys. He's different than Dwayne Haskins was coming out. He's different than Justin Fields was coming out. And I'll pull up the report because I was curious. I want to go back and look at it. Stroud, pure natural thrower, outstanding production, has desired arm size, arm, and decision-making for the position. Decision-making, a big point in there. Not a dynamic athlete in the setup, but he always throws off a firm, strong platform. Smooth delivery, throws a beautiful tight ball. He can layer the ball over linebackers and under safeties. Puts a nice loft on deep balls, making life easy on pass catchers. His issues arise when he has to move and reset and deliver the ball, and this causes his accuracy to suffer. The impressive college football playoff performance against Georgia is a notable exception in this department. He's a build-up speed runner where lanes open up for him to take off. Overall, Stroud is definitely more of a shooter than a scorer, a Bucky phrase. Mm-hmm. He will have success, provided the pieces are in place in front of him and on the perimeter. And, I mean, just it was the most natural throwing session at the combine. I remember saying that specifically, saying I've never seen a more natural throwing session. I've seen guys throw harder. I've seen guys throw farther. I've seen guys make more throws on the move. This was just, this ball requires this velocity and pace. He puts that velocity and pace on the ball. It requires this amount of loft. He puts that amount of loft on it. Buck, he's pure. He is a pure, pure thrower, man.
So, you know, DJ, when you call in the game, you get there early. So you get a chance to see those guys go through. So doing warm-ups, like he goes that pre-warm-up where it's just him and the quarterback coach and whatever. And DJ, the way that he throws in warm-ups is the same way that he throws in the game. It is all their bodies around, but like it doesn't change. Motion doesn't change. Ball placement, none of that stuff changes. And there, he plays with, like, I would say a calmness to his game. That
quiet. He's real quiet.
Never speeds up, never does anything or whatever. And I'm jaded because having known him since he was 16, 17, he's the same exact guy. He was the same player when he came through Elite 11. He's the same exact guy. And now he's just a little bigger, but he has a maturity about him where you can just feel that the confidence is coming. And when they actually put real wide receivers around him, yeah. I mean, like high end, it's going to be a problem. I mean, it's really going to be a problem.
You guys want me to say something? I was just mesmerized watching the first quarter, second and seven deep ball that Tank Dell here. I watched it about 36 times.
I was hoping you weren't
times.
Just reading up on like what, you know, the Taylor Swift, Kelsey thing. I don't know what you
I watched it about 36 times since you guys were talking. And it's like a video game. I'm watching the end zone copy, like looking at Stroud, right? So from that end zone. And the best part about this is the camera loses the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can't see the ball, but what you can do is you can follow the trajectory of it from the shadow on the turf.
Nice.
And it's incredible to watch this. Like the way it, I mean, the natural release is awesome. By the way, Jaguars getting zero pressure. But CJ's back there. I mean, perfect release, right? And then the thing just goes, like it curves right, like perfectly around mm-hmm. the hash. And then like comes back right into the arms of Tank Dell with a closing safety that it just beats. I mean, it's like a thing of beauty. I mean, I could sit here and watch it another 36 times. Like it's, and there was more of them like that, right? I mean, you had the deep throw actual touchdown later in the game to Tank Dell. There's a lot to like here about this young quarterback in Houston. And he's only getting better.
Can I just add one more thing here? And Buck, just put a button on it with this, but we'll get through the rest of these games here, or, you know, these big eight games that we have. But I was thinking, okay, Trevor, man, he doesn't look like Trevor's playing great. We know Zach Wilson mm-hmm. has been terrible. Justin Fields is struggling. Trey Lance has already been traded. You know, Mac Jones has been okay. But that was a draft that we were talking about maybe being one of the best quarterback drafts we had seen, yeah. you know, going back a long time. Man, it's not going well for that group right now.
No, not going well. And, you know, speaking directly about, like, Trevor Lawrence, like, there's something that's just off. And you know, there's a lot of conversation this week about Justin Fields and the kind of offense that he needs to be in and those things. And I'm looking at the offense each and every week that Jacksonville has put around Trevor Lawrence. It's all the stuff that he did at Clemson. There are bubble screens, there's shallow crosses, there's things where he has. I think the hardest thing to do in our seat as evaluators is to be able to project how someone can play in something differently. You know, because yeah. you can have the arm talent, you can have the pedigree, the intelligence, the instincts and those things. But sometimes it still doesn't come together because that – look, the NFL is fast. It's a fast league. Things happen. You got to be able to anticipate the timing and touch and all that. And so it's just, you know, we'll see. He's been good, but you want more because when you're the number one overall pick, the expectation isn't good. It's great. And so that's where he's at right now.
All right, let me take you guys to the Packers-Saints game at Lambeau Field. And for about three quarters, you were like, all right, Saints are going to roll home here with a big road victory.
17-0, right? I was following the score when the game I was at, and I was like, oh, that one's over.
17-0. Derek Carr goes down. Now, ordinarily, you'd be like, all right, you know, that was the turning point there, and it might have been, but Jameis Winston actually came in and made some big throws in this game, and the Saints actually had a chance to win it go ahead with a field goal at the end, and they couldn't get it done. But this game is about Jordan Love. This fourth quarter was about Jordan Love, who in this game throws his first career touchdown pass at Lambeau Field, and in doing so leads the biggest fourth quarter comeback at Lambeau Field in Packers history. All the way back from 17 down. And mm-hmm. we'll go back to the last two drives here because that's what I was most interested of. And when his best was required, he gave his best. Fourth quarter comeback here. The big plays from Love on the first touchdown drive. Third and 10 down inside the red zone. 12-yard throw to Jaden Reed, middle of the field versus drop eight coverage. I mean, like he's patient. He waits and bam, as soon as Reed uncovers, ball right on him. They're in business. And then they have trouble getting over the goal line here. And then it's down to fourth and one. And like, this could be the game here. And Love takes it himself. Jukes a defender at the goal line. He's into the end zone. First career rushing touchdown. Let's go to the next drive. He's got a scramble for 24 yards, tiptoeing down the left sideline that gets the drive rolling. And when you watch the tape of this play here, this Jaden Reed explosive play that went for 30 yards, you watch the tape, you see him manipulate they got a one high safety. So he manipulates that post safety for the Saints with his eyes. You can see the safety dart to the right or to the left of the offense. And then beautifully, Love comes right back, throws a dime to Reed, who's outstretched, makes a perfect catch. By the way, he dropped a couple in this game, and he wasn't the only one for Love earlier. And I just, you know, it was fantastic. So 30 yards there. Then on third and three, he's got the back shoulder fade ball to Romeo Doubs. That's essentially the game winner. There's just, there was so much there in those last two drives where you're like, all right, Packers are going to be in good hands, Buck.
Yeah, the Packers are going to be in good hands. And I think we've talked about this. I know DJ and I talked, I'm sure Rhett, we've also mentioned it. I feel like in a way, and this is going to sound crazy, but I want to make sure I give it its proper context. I felt like Aaron Rodgers' departure was addition by subtraction for the team, meaning that once you remove the crutch of having the four-time MVP, it was going to force Matt LaFleur and this team to play differently and play in a style that I believe is better for them when it comes to the postseason. A little more complimentary football, a little more reliance on the running game, a quarterback that is now playing within the system as opposed to him being the system. And in time, because they've drafted well over years, I feel like this would be a team that plays much better than everyone expects. We're kind of seeing some of that. We are also seeing something that we never, look, we talk about, but it never happens. When the young quarterback sits down and has an opportunity to acclimate to the league, sometimes it is for the betterment of their development. And we're seeing that with Jordan Love because he didn't have to rush onto the field. Despite what we all did when we tried to make those early predictions on whether he could play or not, the patience that they exhibited in terms of waiting before he got on the field is being rewarded because now he has a better feel for the game.
It, DJ, just real quick before we get this back to you. Packers without David Bakhtiari, Elgton Jenkins, Christian Watson is yet to play this year. No Aaron Jones in this game and no Jair Alexander on the defensive side of the ball. And they find a way to win. I mean, that's five top dudes on your team right there.
Yeah, it is impressive. And the other thing I would just add, that Bucky used, I think, the word rare. To me, the cool thing for Jordan Love is he's a first-year starter, but he's not a first-year player. He's got a lot of his skill players are younger than he is, who are guys that have – he's got
all the receivers.
So he's actually – he's already established himself. He can come in and be a leader as a first-time starter because – he's known everybody in the organization in the building for several years, and he's been there longer than all the guys he's playing with on the perimeter. So he's already got credibility and leadership established where most guys, that's all a big storm swirling around at once. I'm trying to figure out what I'm doing. Now I'm trying to establish myself as a leader and trying to learn. He's already got a chance to have that foundation laid, and now he can not only be a first-year starter, but a first-year starter with some with some leadership qualities there. So it's worked out beautifully for Brian Gutekunst and the Green Bay Packers, how this whole thing has come together. So a big win for them. The Packers keep rolling. They win 18-17 over the Saints. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Titans Browns, what we saw on that one, including one of the best defensive performances we've seen this year. We'll get to that right after this.
It's backyard barbecue season, so light up the charcoal or fire up the propane and throw some burgers on the grill. Some people like cheeseburgers, others like hamburgers, and people will argue about pickles until the cows come home. But there's one thing that needs no debate: Hellmann's Real Mayonnaise. It's so rich and creamy that it instantly makes any burger irresistible. You add Hellmann's and boom, next level burgers, it's that easy. And then there's the side that every backyard burger cries out for: potato salad. Do you want to know the best secret ingredient? You've probably already guessed it. Hellmann's Real Mayonnaise. There are two kinds of potato salad: deliciously irresistible, rich and creamy potato salad, and potato salad made without Hellmann's. It's up to you what you want to serve. For great recipe ideas, visit Hellmann's.com.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, guys, let's jump into this one. This was a thrashing. This was not a good matchup for the Tennessee Titans, who have an offensive line that has holes and has issues. And they ran up against, really, in my opinion, the most talented defensive player in the NFL. T.J. Watt, you can make cases, is on track right now with Micah Parsons in the discussion as well. Both those guys are playing great. Nobody as a rusher is as skilled, has everything at their disposal like Myles Garrett does. And that was on display in this game. They had no answer for him. He was just completely dominant. 3.5 sacks, forced a fumble, 5 quarterback hits. I went back and watched it. You know, the plays circulating on the internet, you're seeing everywhere with him moving side to side, and the tight ends are following him, which is kind of hilarious. But his speed to power is unlike anything that I've seen, just in terms of how dynamic and explosive he is. I posted a couple plays, his first 2-3 steps up the field. And when he transitions speed to power, it's a wrap, man. Like, you are on roller skates. Nobody's anchoring that. He just throws tackles. Poor Dillard. I felt bad for Andre Dillard. That's a rough one for him, trying to stop that charge. It's not going to happen. But Jim Schwartz has this defense rolling. And Jim Schwartz, you know, I think he had been consulting with the Titans after he left the Eagles as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure he knew what the issues were there, and he was able to attack them very, very specifically. But two takeaways from the game. That one, and Buck, I'll get it to you after this, but you can go either way, any way you want. But that was the first one, was Myles Garrett. Then I was like, you know what, Deshaun Watson, gosh, I look at the box score. So then I'm like, I want to watch the game and see what I discover. Mm-hmm. So as I'm watching it, I'm sitting here thinking, okay, he's like two different players. When what we've said in the past is, I don't know how great this offense fits him. So I'm like, you know, I'm watching it and I'm charting, and I'm like, you know, I need to go to PFF afterwards and see what these numbers are, because this is what stands out to me, is he is infinitely more comfortable in the gun, no shotgun. I mean, no play action. He's different. A lot of quarterbacks prefer the play action. It simplifies looks. It gives him more space and depth. He has always been more comfortable in a catch, rock and throw, gun attacks. What he did in college, it's what he did in Houston. Under center, play action, it's not him. That's not who he is, not what he does best. So I'm watching, I'm like, okay, let me go pull up these numbers, and you can do it pretty easy here. So when they were on play action, and it wasn't bad, but on play action, he was 9 of 15, okay? He had a touchdown, 9 of 15 for 112 yards, but he took 3 sacks there. So 9 of 15, took 3 sacks, 112 yards and a touchdown. Now let's go to non-play action, which, again, most quarterbacks like play action. On non-play action, he was 18 for 22 with a drop included in that. Should have been 19 for 22 for 177 yards. He had a touchdown, no picks, no sacks. Like, that is, at some point in time, they got to put it together of like, okay, I know what we've done. And I know if I'm Kevin Stefanski, what I'm comfortable with. That's not him. He is not a play-action quarterback. He's not an under-center quarterback. Put that dude in the gun. And as Buck, as you like to say, it is spread and shred. That's who Deshaun Watson is.
So if you go back and we talk about the quarterback, that's how he's played his entire life. He didn't play under-center in Clemson. When you look at the best of Deshaun Watson going back to Clemson, it was shotgun, ball out, RPOs, quick game, quick rhythm thrower, let him go to work. When you go and you think about what they did in Houston with him, it was shotgun, spread it out, give me the matchups, I'll figure it out. DJ, that's him. And what you're seeing, and it's a great observation by you, he's a much different player when he's under center than when he's in the gun and doing what he's always done. Will Kevin Stefanski and that crew be able to say, hey, guys, I know our playbook is built around these things, but the player does this stuff well? And it's the hardest thing for any coach to admit, man, I love all this stuff. I spent all offseason drawing up all my stuff. But my players do something different. Yeah. They play better doing something. You got to meet him where he's at, because they're going to need him to play at his best, and playing at his best is in the gun.
It's not even like play action under center, Buck. He's in the gun. They use him in the gun, ride play action, pistol play. He's not comfortable in any of it. He's just better. Just put him in the side saddle, go empty, whatever you got to do. Just let him take a three step from the gun, Rhett, and let him pick and stick there.
It's about time that they start to figure out, right, what he wants, what he does well. I mean, like, it's, you know, I know they hadn't played a full season yet, but he'd been around now for a while. Like, you hope they can build on this. Meanwhile, for the Titans, like, I mean, I'll ask this to you, DJ, and then we can move past this game. But is there a team with a smaller margin for error offensively or really team-wide than the Tennessee Titans? Like, if they can't dominate on the ground with the King, with Derrick Henry, it's over. Like, they don't have
throw Spears in there too. I mean, those are their two players, Tyjae Spears and Derrick Henry.
And it just feels like, you know, at some point, are we like, okay, the way we are currently constructed is not going to allow us to find sustained success much longer. Like, I think after this year, you know, I'm going to be looking at some pretty significant roster changes.
Well, I think Jim Schwartz watched that tape against the Chargers too and realized, look, they hit two home run balls on the Chargers. The Chargers just got caught flat-footed. And Jim Schwartz like, nah, that ain't happening. You got to have to march the ball against us, and this is not going to happen. You're not going to give that up. Pick a 3 points. And the Cleveland Browns, look, that's a great – we talk about scheme and player. I don't know there's a better fit. You know, when you look at Jim Schwartz with the personnel that he has, it's a really, really good fit there. Buck, we teased this game at the top. We talked about it at the top. We couldn't avoid it. But we can go a little deeper if you'd like here on the Dolphins 70 burger they put on the Broncos.
What do you got for us, bud?
This is what everyone wanted to see from this offense when Mike McDaniels took over. So what we wanted and what we thought we were getting from the Miami Dolphins when they hired McDaniels, we thought we were getting the Kyle Shanahan running game. Okay, so now the first year we saw a spread attack that was built around Tua and Tyreek Hill and the fast guys outside. So we just talked about building your passing game around what the quarterback does well. So Miami Dolphins did a great job of taking, Tua does a lot of quick rhythm throws. We talked about him being like a blackjack dealer at a Vegas casino. That's what he does. He can get it out or whatever. So now they've been able to take that pass attack and then begin to put some of the Shanahan running game with it. And when it comes together like it came together on Sunday against the Broncos, it is a problem because both things present different challenges to the defense and the defensive coordinator. Obviously, Vance Joseph and the Broncos couldn't stop any of it. But it is a difficult set of concepts and things to defend. And when the Dolphins have it rolling, good luck, because to stop the running game requires you to play a certain way on defense. You may have to play more man-to-man to stuff the box, but you play man-to-man against that track team that they have outside. You're inviting them to bust the clock on you in the passing game. I'm waiting for the team to crack the code on how to defend this team. But right now, 2023, I don't know if there's a better offense that we've seen than the Miami Dolphins.
I think we were always kind of waiting. Like, all right, we know they've got the speed, right? We know that Tyreek and Jalen, when he's healthy, that they can roll and they can push the ball down the field. They can run those deep overs. I think Tyreek Hill was in the scouting report for the Broncos this week, although they sure did leave him uncovered on that first drive. And obviously that was a bust, and so they got issues there. But I felt like we were always kind of waiting, you know, for what we knew was possible with a Mike McDaniel-led run game plan. And man, I don't know that you will ever see, and this is the first time we've ever seen it, 350-plus passing, 350-plus rushing in NFL history. Now, look, they're not going to get that every week. But if you're talking this team's capable of 200 on the ground and 250 in the air every week, what do you take away, DJ?
Well, I was just looking up some numbers because I was curious on this, and I can swing it back to Buck quickly on this one. But, you know, comparisons, often we look at body types first, and that's the comparison that you make. You can have a similar game in a different body. And just off of this, I'm just taking, obviously, the Tyreek one's deeper, but we'll get to the A-chain one here in a second. But if you look at it, the closest thing to Tyreek Hill that we've seen in the NFL, is Randy Moss. I mean, they're totally different body types, but Randy Moss played at a different speed. And Buck, you saw him. I mean,
just game breaker.
He was just different. He looked different than everybody else that you play. You watch the games every week. He's different. He's faster than everybody. And then you look at that same Vikings team. You remember in the backfield, they had Robert Smith. Now, Robert Smith and A-Chain and Devin A-Chain have totally different bodies. But I'm like, in some weird way, Robert Smith was a track star at Ohio State, I believe is where, mm-hmm. where he went to school. So you've got a track star running back and the fastest receiver in the NFL. In some ways, this looks a little bit like the old like Minnesota Vikings, that offense that took the league over with Brian Billick as the offensive coordinator back on those teams, Buck.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about there. Raheem Mostert also has a very accomplished like track background. So you just talk about the speed that they have and how they can attack it. But yeah, A-Chain gives them a different dimension. It's one of the things, you know, DJ, when we were doing the evaluation and I'm looking at the running backs, and so you look at all the other guys, look at Zach Sermon, and you see him plod, and he's just hammering Dwayne McBride from UAB. And then I was like, okay, let me put the text in, and he's like, woo! All over the place, and it's whatever. And then you realize, like, oh, he's light, though. And the Dolphins have found a way to put him on the field and allow him to be an effective weapon despite his size deficiencies, and it's a problem. Just the speed overall, and we've said it, the number one thing that you have to have, like we can talk about size or whatever, but you want a fast team because fast teams create big plays. They create turnovers on defense because the speed is everything. And the Miami Dolphins have assembled a world-class track team. And because of that, they wanted teams to be feared.
Can I ask you one question? I'll go to Red on this one. Do you put the for sale sign up in the yard if you're Denver? Do you say, hey, you know, Simmons, maybe Surtain, just say, hey,
We got to reboot this thing. I wouldn't do Surtain. He's a building block, right? Like you got to have something, right, that you can hang your hat on. But I feel like at some point here, you know, you'll start to look at those receivers, right? Judy, Sutton, you know, are they
already put that for sale sign up? Yeah. They didn't get any nibbles. I'm talking about real assets. I'm talking about real dudes, and say we are going to take this down to these studs.
That's funny. Did you hear Sean Payton's comments about trying to win the offseason and all the other stuff? Like they had a team that was trying to win the offseason and they spent so much time worrying about that they didn't necessarily build the team. I mean, he definitely is firing all shots. I mean, he kind of threw the management team and everybody under the bus about the construction of the squad, but they're not a good squad right now. And we can put it all on Russ for a minute, but it's beyond that. You give them 70 points and you play the way that they play, it's more than just Russell Wilson.
Why don't you reunite? Why don't you have Joe call Sean and see if we can reunite Hackett with Russell Wilson again? See if that'll work.
Have like $90 million on the quarterback room. That would go well. Anyways, I wouldn't. I mean, I don't know who the player would be. I don't know who it would be, but I could see.
Run
to the bottom.
I think you're on the right track, though.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to the next one here. Rhett, are you up here? What do we got?
Yeah. Are we talking Bears Chiefs now?
Yep.
Because this. All right.
If you do one Taylor Swift pun, I'm going to kick you off the show. So just know that's not allowed.
DJ, I had planned to not mention the Chiefs. Okay. Not at all. Because look, they did what they do. They beat up on teams they're supposed to beat up on. They're far better personnel-wise, scheme-wise, coaching staff-wise than the Bears right now, and they showed it, and they proved it. So let's dig in on the disaster that is the Bears offense here for a second. So I just kind of went in and wanted to see what this thing looked like, and I watched the first drop back from Justin Fields. He's in his own end zone, which, you know, isn't a great start, but he actually makes a really good play. Like he gets out of some trouble, like he is scrambling for his life out to the right, makes a pinpoint throw, and they get like a 10, 12 yard gain, get some breathing room. And I watched the second play and the right guard gets absolutely destroyed and Fields, you know, is in trouble like from the jump. And it wasn't even Chris Jones, right? And so then the third play, KC has to deal. They have four guys ready to tackle what essentially is a two-man route combo, both guys going vertical down the field. Nobody open. Fields throws in DJ Moore's direction, but they got no chance at it. It's essentially a throwaway. And he's getting pressure, by the way, because he's holding it, waiting. Nobody's there. All right, next play, he gets good. This is all in like the first quarter here. And I was like, all right.
Please don't do too much more. This is painful.
But I'm just telling you. Gets good protection. Another two-man deeper route combo. Again, no shot. Like they keep challenging it deep down the field with two guys, and there's nobody in the middle of the field for high percentage completions. I mean, like the third and six, third and seven, and they've got these deep routes well covered. There's nobody challenging the sticks. Like nobody. They're sending a little delay out to the flat, like at the end, but in the Fields are just sitting there. Like, he's a sitting duck. And it's just like a microcosm of that, you know, 10, 12 play sequence that I'm talking about, like a microcosm of what we're talking about here, like for the whole game. I don't know. Part of it's on Justin. And like everybody takes a piece of the blame here, I think is the ultimate conclusion.
It's such a crazy thing to watch. I mean, I understand his challenges and those things, but just the level of ineptitude from this offense is beyond belief, from personnel to scheming to just the execution of the quarterback and others. It's crazy. And to come off the week that they had when everyone is talking, all the conversation, and
we knew they were going to face, man. That's a bad week for them. And that's not the opponent you want to face coming off a really bad week.
Yeah. Usually you find refuge in between the white lines.
No.
And not when those white lines are narrow.
Yeah. They got beat to sleep. And I don't know where it goes. They've lost 13 in a row for the first time in franchise history. They don't have any confidence as a team. If you're Matt Eberflus, I don't know even know where you start, you know, like trying to figure out how to pick up the pieces on this team, on the offense, on the quarterback. That's a tough one. It's a tough one.
The weird thing is like, yeah, if you wanted to make a change, like where are you going offensively? Like if you're saying like it's not working with Luke Getsy, you know, like, all right, now what? You know, I feel like it's taken this long to get to this point. You know, where like you've been trying to find, like, all right, just give them some time to get used to each other, to figure things out a little bit. I don't know. I don't know that there's an easy solution here.
I don't think that solution comes till we're in Detroit for the draft. That's when that solution comes.
Yeah.
And we'll see, you know, we'll see who all is left there. But this current mix is not good. I can't even spend any more time on this because this is just like it's painful. And it's a reason why the Jets Patriots is not on.
You know what, DJ? I don't think they can shake it off. You know, I just don't think they can.
It's so bad. It's so bad. I thought you were going to go somewhere else. I thought, you know, if they just love to see him just get to 17, you know, can they just,
my gosh.
All right. That's why I said, no, I didn't want to go down that road. But that's also why so for those that are listening going, is he going to break down Patriots Jets? No, because I didn't want to subject myself to having to watch that. I didn't see the game. I was at another game this morning. I have so much time. There's games I want to study. There's things I'm curious about.
Out of respect for the game.
I can't do that. I just didn't want to spend my Monday morning watching that. I couldn't do it. All right. The Sunday nighter, Steelers beat the Raiders 23-18. Rhett, I'll let you get back on the decision here. Cause we've been, you know, I think we have the numbers, the odds. You can read those off here in just a minute.
Yeah.
McDaniel's going for it late, which was very curious to say the least. I'll just say this, a couple things.
Yep.
Kenny Pickett, I thought he played well. I thought he trusted his eyes. I thought he threw the ball well. I thought it made sense what they were doing. They mixed in some screens. They took shots down the field. He just looked like it was, I don't want to say screw it, but it was just kind of, he was just like, you know what? I'm just going to play. I'm just going to sit back here. I'm going to hit my back foot. I'm going to trust it and I'm going to let it rip. There was no hesitancy. I thought there was he was a little unsure early in the season in those first couple games. He just wasn't playing with confidence. And I thought it was just kind of a screw it type game. He was like, you know, I'm going to take my shots. Wherever they are, I'm going to use my legs and create, which he did, which I love to see because he's really athletic when he gets on the move. I thought he did a really nice job with their defense. If he plays just that's the bar. He plays at that level, they'll be a playoff team because the defense is so good.
Yeah, and he used his athleticism a little bit too on a number of plays where he kind of got out of the pocket and showcased that he can, you know, actually make some moves. The throw downfield to Calvin Austin was awesome. That was a heck of a way to start the game, right? On that deep shot.
Big day for the little guys.
There it is. See? All right. So this is courtesy of our buddy Bill Smith, who does a great job with all the analytics and research for us. And you put this in here on this email from Bill, who was talking about the win probability percentages based on the decision making from Josh McDaniel. So let me just run through this first part to set the stage here. They had the ball at the 3:15 mark of the fourth quarter, down 8. Right. So one score game, needed a touchdown, 2-point conversion. They got a 4th and 5 from the Pittsburgh 29. They decide to opt for a Daniel Carlson field goal at that point, which they kicked and it was good. And I was like, you know what? At that point, all right, I get it. There's 3:15 left. Like, even if you don't get the stop on, you know, they get a first down, you're still okay. You have all three timeouts and the 2-minute warning. I kind of understood it at that point, right? Then they actually get, you know, some good fortune, and there's a penalty call, a leverage call on DeMarvin Leal. And so they actually get a personal foul, 15 yards, moving the ball down the field. They take the three off the board, and they're trying to go get the touchdown. Well, then a whole nother minute comes off the clock and find themselves in another 4th-and-4 situation, this time from the Pittsburgh 8, and they still opt to kick the field goal on 4th down. And so that part of it, like the second time doing it, I was like, okay, this feels like this might come back to bite them. So here's what the win probability did. Essentially, Josh McDaniels lost 5.4% of win probability by deciding to kick the field goal on 4th-and-4 with 2:25 to go. If the win probability with the field goal was just 8.5%. If they would have gone for it, the win probability was almost 14%. If successful on the 4th down, the win probability is 26%. If unsuccessful, 3.5, but the conversion probability was 45%.
Yeah.
Like that's the part that makes sense.
He was not
to
with
me.
The math on that one.
Yeah. And by the way, Jimmy Garoppolo was under constant duress in this game. Obviously,
well, Jermaine Illuminor is not—he's that's not a great matchup with T.J. Watt. Let's just be—I'll be nice about it. I'll leave it at that, Buck.
No, and if for the Steelers, it's just another way that they find a way to win ugly, and they just stack enough wins until they find their stride. It's another ugly win. Defense kind of led the way. You're right about Kenny Pickett being able to just kind of find enough plays on offense in the passing game to kind of keep them going. But Mike Tomlin typically finds it out, figures it out. And as long as they continue to win these games in whatever fashion that they can win them in the first half of the year, we know they're going to be a much better team down the stretch, barring any injuries. And so they go. They're 2-1 sitting at the top of the AFC North with Baltimore.
All right. Last game we'll jump into here. There may be a couple nuggets here at the end. But yeah. I want to start before Bucky jumps on this game. I try to live my life with proper morals and integrity. And when I screw up, I'll tell you I screwed up. I've done it a million times on players I've screwed up on. But I thought this was a slam dunk, foregone conclusion that the Arizona Cardinals would have the first pick in the draft. They're going to be the worst team in the league. And all they've done is be competitive and then go out and knock off what had been the most dominant team in the NFL and the Dallas Cowboys, and did it in pretty convincing fashion. Jonathan Gannon, please accept my apology. Monty Austinford is a good buddy. Please accept my apology. You have put a team on the field that is competing their rear ends off. And there's
they get the fire in the gut. I think
the fire is in the gut. Buck, you can go in on this game whatever way you want to go. But I just wanted to issue a formal apology and say I was wrong. You guys have put a competitive product on the field, and it's been a good product through the first 3 weeks.
Yeah, good product. Josh Dobbs, how about that? Josh Dobbs gets his first win of his career as a quarterback. 7 years into the league, he finally gets it done. Did some things that I don't even know if we saw him do much at University of Tennessee, running zone reads, getting outside, playing with a lot of emotion and firepower. But this is a team that is kind of scrappy. I didn't expect them to be scrappy. Like, and sometimes we can get bogged down by the, I would say, awkward presser. The awkward initial press conference or the awkward behind-the-scenes stuff that we saw on Jonathan Gannon. But whatever it is that they're selling in the building is working. Team plays hard. Team is competitive. They were able to get a dub against the Cowboys.
Cowboys had been crushing people. I mean, they crushed the Giants. They crushed the Jets.
And so they figured out. They're playing just well enough on offense, not messing it up. And then defensively, they were able to kind of get it done against a Cowboys team that should have been able to just go up and down the field at will.
Yeah. I mean, Ibid. I just kind of shocked, you know, at watching the whole thing unfold. And I guess the way they played the Giants last week, and maybe we shouldn't be. But I think that this team will definitely, they may not win a ton of games this year, but they're going to give some people trouble. Is probably the best way that
they're not laying down for anybody. And Cowboys continue to have issues, as we mentioned a little bit earlier, in the red zone. That has been a bugaboo, continues to be an issue for them. They've got to get that resolved and get that fixed. I would also say, you know, one of the storylines that maybe we didn't pay attention to in this one is that Jonathan Gannon has been in Philadelphia. He's very familiar with Dallas. Mm-hmm. He's very familiar with their personnel. And maybe that played a part in here as they were able to get a big win. All right, through some of these other games real quick. I'll just run through them. If there's anything else you guys want to add, Patriots Jets, as I mentioned, it's Zach Wilson. It's not working. Nothing else needs to be said. It's like to me in high school, you're failing Spanish 2 and you drop the course so you can pick up a teacher's assistant class. And 2 weeks later, they throw you back in Spanish 2. You're like, I don't want to be in here. I already failed this. I dropped this class. What are you doing? Let me just help this teacher grade some papers over here. Like, I don't want to do this. But they've got to figure something out there. The Bills and the Commanders, well, that was a butt kicking. The Bills 37-3, all is right in Buffalo right now.
Bills defense, I think that's for real. And you know what? I know they lost Tremaine Edmonds in free agency, but that linebacker core might be better this year with Terrell Bernard and Matt Milano.
Yeah, he can.
Bernard was incredible this last week.
And then Colts Ravens, maybe one of the bigger surprises on that one, Buck. The Colts with Gardner Minshew, they go, and I know the Ravens are missing 7 starters. Nonetheless, that is not an easy place to play, and that is a rivalry they take seriously in Baltimore for obvious reasons. That's a big win for the Colts.
Yeah, big win for the Colts. Gardner Minshew finds a way to kind of make enough plays. Now, he also has some bonehead blunders that he did it, but they were able to overcome it. But how about the day for the kicker, being able to knock it down, being able to
four from 50 plus.
I mean, that's unbelievable. Like, they have a long distance kicker. So you never really like kickers until you need a kicker. Indianapolis Colts certainly have a greater appreciation for the kicking game.
No one loves competing and playing football. I can't say no one. There are few who love competing and playing football as much as Gardner Minshew does. Like, the joy that dude plays with is awesome.
I would also add one more thing on those guys. They got after the passer a little bit with their defensive front. Let's see. Zaire Franklin had a sack. Ebukam had a sack. Kwity Paye is going to be a good player, starting to come into his own. He had one. Taven Bryan had one. So they did a nice
Jaguars
job.
Pass Taven Bryan?
I know. How about that? They're playing.
Taven Bryan,
If you're listening, be honest with yourself. Did you know that Taven Bryan was playing for the Colts right now? Be honest. Be honest out there.
First-round pick.
Yeah, last one. I didn't see any of this game, so I can't comment on it. But Panthers, Seahawks, the Seahawks win that one 37-27. Either of you guys catch any of that one?
I caught the stiff arm that Zach Charbonnet put on a Panthers unsuspecting member of the secondary on his way to the end zone. Charbonnet and Kenneth Walker essentially are that's the way they want to win.
Yeah.
And they're going to beat you up doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's old school. It's old school for them. It's Pete Carroll. And it's the way that they want to play. They want to beat you up. They want to run it. They want to play defense. And they've been able to do it for a long time in Seattle. So no need for them to change it.
All right, guys. So this was fun, man. We went through a bunch of stuff today. I always love it when we kind of get in some of those deeper discussions as we're able to do. Really enjoyed it. You know what I'm doing? I'm off to go buy a tuxedo because my daughter's getting married in 2 weeks. She's getting married. And so I've got to... I was going the rent buy thing and I somehow convinced myself that, you know what, there might be other big events and then I'll never have to rent a tuxedo again.
Wow.
It'd have been
Need my help for this.
Could be flawed thinking. I know Rhett's my, he is my clothing consultant.
You need me here.
I'm going to be at Nordstrom in about 2 hours. If you'd like to meet me down at Fashion Valley in San Diego in 2 hours.
Unfortunately, it'll take me three to get there. So
quick question, quick poll for the group here, for the panel. Tuxedo, we go long tie or bow tie?
I mean, you want to be classic or you want to be a little bit more like polished modern? Polished modern is going to send you with the tie.
Okay,
Buck? I think James Bond style. You got to go with a bow tie, dude. Like that's the only way. Yeah, you got to go. Yeah, Sean Connery. I would expect you to be very debonair and dapper,
making sure that you represent. I can see you as a bow tie guy, I think.
Okay. I feel like I don't want to be the person who's trying too hard. I want to be a properly aged apparel, 45 years old.
I think
the shoe game is really more important. Make sure we have some nice shoes.
You gotta get the shiny tuxedo. I think there are specific tuxedos.
Are you going black? Are you going with the patent leather? You going with the patent leather joints? Make sure you get a good, nice, good
set. So would you go leather over the shine then?
I'm saying, like if you're going to do it, you got to do it the right way. Don't have those rental joints.
Just make sure they're looking good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But nice answer me the question. Like, you know what I'm talking like? Do they need to be like, really, like shiny? Like you can
classic see look is the shine. Yeah. You got to have the shine. Yes. You got to see shiny. Your face in them. Yeah.
Okay.
And
okay.
And
bow tie.
And I you need to practice your like that first dance and all that other stuff. You got to get yourself ready.
No, the best part about it, you know, the best part about that. I'm glad you mentioned that. My daughter did me a solid on that, and she was like, "Look, just kind of, it's kind of a weird part of the wedding is that everybody's just staring at you doing the father-daughter dance, the first dance." All she's like, so she cut the songs down to a minute. So she's like, "Hey, that's we're that's a couple of these one little
verse
twirl,
and a chorus, we are done.
One twirl and then boom, let's get on with the show here." So that's that's big. But yeah, can you believe that? She's 22 years old. She's getting married in 2 weeks. So it's busy fall for me over here.
Okay, yeah, buddy.
Very, very busy. Holy smokes.
Yep. So I'll let you guys know. I'll send you a text if I go bow tie or regular tie. I think I'm leaning towards a bow tie. I think I like that more of a classic age appropriate look.
Yeah, you're going to be in good shape.
All right. I appreciate it. If you want to weigh in on that, go ahead and send me a tweet on that. Let me know.
Leave us a review.
We appreciate that. In the review. Yeah. Leave us a rating and review and let me know if I should wear a long tie or a bow tie. Appreciate it. All right. We got plenty more coming your way this week. Four more episodes. Be on the lookout for those, including number 1,000, the 1,000th Move the Sticks episode. That's going to be coming your way. I believe Friday is when that's going to air. So be on the lookout for that. Anyways, we'll see you next time right here on Move the Sticks. You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
You wouldn't expect to hear that we're America's third best city for beer like this one. Or home to vibes like this. And this. It might surprise you that we're top 10 for immersive art that's like,
whoa.
And?
Hmm.
Not to mention, we have one of the top zoos in the country. So can a city with the country's best pro soccer team, ranking as a top culinary destination in the world, be in your own backyard? Yes, Columbus. Plan your summer at experiencecolumbus.com/summer.